Are you sick of being told you have faith, we have science? Have you ever been frustrated with not being able to defend your faith or give a reasonable answer for the hope that lies within you? Coming up next on Hope Radio is the New York Apologetics Radio Show that will help you to present your faith with conviction, confidence, and clarity. Now, here's Nick and Anthony with the New York Apologetics Radio Show.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the New York Apologetics Radio Broadcast. We have another great show planned for you tonight. My name is Anthony Uvinio, and I serve on the Elder Board at Church on the Sound, located in Stony Brook, New York. And I'm joined by Nick Mitchell, who is an associate pastor at the Abundant Life Church of God, located in Holbrook, New York. And together, we form New York Apologetics. And for those of you who may be listening for the first time, New York Apologetics is all about defending the Christian faith. We've built an impressive collection of material that anyone interested in defending their faith can freely access at newyorkapologetics.com. So now let's turn our attention to tonight's topic and continue in our Apologetics 101 series.
Last week, we finished part three in our series entitled Apologetics 101. For you folks who are just tuning in, this series had been created to help you become familiar with apologetics. To get the most out of the series, we're going to make the following suggestions. Now, every week we make the same suggestions, but they really do help. So bear with us here. One, listen to the broadcast every week because the information has a definite order and it builds on the prior week. Second, every week we place a worksheet designed for that week's broadcast on the website. Why? So you can print the worksheets out and fill them out as you go along, as you listen to the broadcast. Now, if you do that, after a while, you're going to have an apologetics notebook, mm-hmm. which would be really great. Three, if you have your Bible handy, this will also be helpful because we do go through some verses, and it would be great for you to be able to look them up. Four, if you get stuck or you do not understand something or you would like more info, shoot us an email, and we'll do our best to respond to you. On the bottom of each broadcast page, there is an area where you can send us your comments or questions concerning this week's topic. Now, I just want to say this before we get into where we left off last week, and that is that some of you reached out to us this week vis-a-vis the website, and you've been asking us where we're doing presentations, and you know we are doing presentations at Abundant Life Church every Wednesday at 8 o'clock at night, and also we're going to be starting up at New Beginnings Church in Amityville, probably sometime in August. We'll keep you posted if you want to attend. All right, so Anthony, where did we leave off last week?
Well, last week we started talking about some of the arguments used in apologetics, and to help us remember those arguments, we introduced an acronym, CODE, C-O-D-E, and it stands for Causation, Order, Design, and Ethics. Again, the acronym is CODE, C-O-D-E. And we had gotten as far as causation last week, and this week we're going to begin with the O, which stands for order.
All right, so if you're looking on your worksheet, if you printed it out, it says that order can be defined as, number one, and the definition we have is this, information put together in an organized way. An arrangement, if you will. So again, information put together in an organized way, an arrangement, number one on your worksheet. Now, as far as Christianity tells us that God references the fixed order of the heavens and the earth in Jeremiah 33:25. I mean, Ed, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, we know through Scripture that God is a God of order, not disorder. Disorder does not reflect the nature of God. It doesn't reflect his thoughts or his mindset. God is a God of order, and he set things in order so that we can live productive lives. Imagine a life without any order or without any physical constants. If we didn't know if gravity was going to be the same strength as it was yesterday, today.
Yeah, you know? I mean, even if you look at some of the countries like in Africa right now where they have these sort of these governments that have broken down and they have these factions that are running around and running amok. There's utter chaos in these areas. You know, order is good. Order is definitely good. So number three on your sheet, this order can be also referred to as natural law. Now, when you talk about order, especially if you're talking with an atheist or you're talking with someone who doesn't believe in God, let's say, they refer to order as natural law. It can be referred that way. And both 4 and 5 on our worksheet state that the universe obeys certain rules, laws to which all things must adhere.
Right, yeah. I mean, look, we have certain laws that are in place that God has established. Again, like the law of gravity. We know that when we walk outside today, neither one of us is going to start floating away. Even though one of us is losing weight, we're not going to start floating away because gravity remains constant, thankfully.
Okay, I don't know how losing weight. I guess that's that's kind of like
a little
law.
Lighter, like makes a helium lighter, balloon. Yeah. You know,
there does come a point, I guess, where you could float away.
Right.
All right. So these laws are precise. Many of them are mathematical in their nature. And what we're going to do for you today is we're going to take a look at 7 such natural laws. Now, if you're on your worksheet, we're at number 6, and we're going to name these laws for you. So if you see there, you got A through G. And let's name these up for you, and then we'll go through them kind of one by one. We'll touch on them a little bit. The first one is the law of biogenesis. Now, we're not going to define them just yet. So if you're writing, the law of biogenesis.
Right. The second law would be the law of chemistry.
Third would be the laws of planetary motion.
D would be the laws of physics.
E would be the laws of mathematics.
F would be the laws of logic.
And G would be the uniformity of nature.
Right.
So once again, we have, starting with A, we have the law of life or biogenesis, B, the laws of chemistry, C, the laws of planetary motion, D, the laws of physics, E, the laws of mathematics, F, the laws of logic, and finally, G, the uniformity of nature.
Right. So let's take a look at that first law, the law of life or biogenesis. This law is attributed to Louis Pasteur. The law is the observation that living things only come from other living things by reproduction. For example, a spider lays eggs, which develops into spiders. This means that life does not arise from non-living material. And it seems rather obvious, but when you're talking to people who don't believe in the existence of God, this becomes a point of contention.
Yeah, I mean, last week we talked about causality, and we showed that the universe had a definite beginning, which would mean that life would have to come from non-life, or it would have to be created. And this law simply states that life cannot come from non-life. I think you have an analogy for this, yeah?
Yeah, well...
Those of you that watch cartoons.
Right, the naturalist...
Those of us that watch cartoons.
The naturalist atheist cannot explain how life came from non-life. So Nick and I developed something called the Frosty Factor. If you've any time around the holidays, my kids love to watch this cartoon called Frosty the Snowman. And the kids get together, they shape up a couple of, you know, round balls of snow, and it looks great. It looks just like a snowman until they pop the hat on top of Frosty's head, and he comes to life. It's called the Frosty Factor. There's magic in that hat. And in the same way, there must be some kind of magic that happens in a naturalistic, atheistic worldview that brings life out of non-life.
You know, while we're on the subject, New York Apologetics is both on Facebook and on Twitter. And if you don't know it, sometimes we get into some really heavy debates on Twitter. Every time we post a post about God, we get attacked by the atheist community around the country, which is okay. We actually enjoy the conversations most of the time. Sometimes it does get a little nasty on there, and at that point we back off. But we just kind of shut down. We don't enter into kind of like personal things.
My question would be, does a tweet come from someone or no one?
No one.
Did it just pop into the internet sphere?
I guess so. I'm not sure if you could say that. Maybe.
Well, if life comes from non-life, then tweets can come from a non-tweet.
Yeah. All right. A non-tweeting tweet. All right. I think that we've gotten a little off track here, folks. We're going to have to rein in Anthony for a moment. Let's look at it this way. If the atheists had said to us this week in particular, they said that to say that life comes from non-life, of course, a scientific fact. And to say that life doesn't, we don't know where it comes from, is actually what they say. We bring them to the point and we suggest that the universe had a beginning, let's say. And that, you know, with the causality, we say that, you know, material, energy, space, and time all have an origin, which means that prior to that, there was no time, no space, no energy, no matter. So whatever brought that into existence or caused it to exist would have to be timeless, spaceless, immaterial, and of enormous power, and then have to will it into existence.
Exactly.
So, and we say that would be the very definition of God, right? God is timeless, he's spaceless, he's immaterial, he's all-powerful, and he's
willing to
create. Person. Yeah, yeah. He's got a mind, obviously. He wills to create. All right, so with that being said, they deny that, and they say that because we suggest that it's God that brought this into existence, that we're not intellectually honest. This was the argument on Twitter this week. So I say to him, how is that intellectually honest? And they would say, well, to be honest, you would have to say you don't know how it happened. That would be the honest answer. What do you think of that?
Well, they usually claim that when we say it was God, that it's an argument from ignorance. Because we don't know, we plug God in the equation to explain it. But the problem is you cannot explain life from non-life apart from supernatural activity. We've never seen life come from non-life. We've never seen animation come from inanimate objects. It's just an impossibility outside of the addition of some kind of design, some kind of order, some kind of supernatural power to come in to bring inanimate objects to life. Now, an atheist generally tries to pull apart each one of these arguments individually, but there's something called the cumulative case argument. They might be able to try to poke holes in each one of these arguments, but when you line them all up together, it makes an incredible mountain of evidence that it would be almost impossible for an atheist to debunk.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. You know, the law of the biogenesis, or even going back to that beginning of the universe, when they say, and this is how we answered them, and they said that saying I don't know what caused it would be more honest than saying that the better explanation would be God. We say to them, if you don't know what caused it, then how do you know it wasn't God?
Exactly.
You just said you don't know. So they don't know what caused it, but they know it wasn't God. It, you know.
Right. They take that possibility, that option off the table, and then call themselves free thinkers.
Yeah. So to all atheists out there, you can't have it both ways.
Right.
If you don't know, then you don't know.
Are you open-minded? That's the
exactly.
question I have. If you're open-minded, then God has to be a possibility. Now, just a reminder that you're listening to the New York Apologetics radio broadcast with Nick and Anthony. We're on every Thursday night at 7 o'clock. Be sure also to check us out on the web at www.newyorkapologetics.com. On the website, you can submit your questions to us, and we'll do our best to answer them in our upcoming shows. Please, we'd like to interact with you and help you tackle these tough issues and answer these questions on the air. Even if you're an unbeliever, an atheist, whatever you are, you're welcome to send in some questions. We would love to go back and forth with you and have a free exchange of ideas. I think it would be great.
Yeah, we look forward to it. So let's go back to the worksheet. Number 7, the law of biogenesis. Now, just for your own knowledge, there's two terms here. The one that we have on the page is biogenesis, which means that life came from non-life. Life came from life, rather. The actual definition we have is that it's the observation that living things come only from other living things. So if you're writing on your worksheet, it's the observation that living things come only from other living things. Now, if you put an A in front of biogenesis, you get abiogenesis, and that would mean that life comes from non-life. And a lot of them do ascribe to that. But we're going to sort of power through these. We spent a lot of time on number 7. But let's go to number 8.
Number 8 is the law of chemistry. And this law states that life requires a specific chemistry. Right? Our bodies are powered by chemical reactions and depend on the laws of chemistry operating in a uniform fashion. Even the information that makes up any living being is stored on a long molecule called DNA. Life as we know it would not be possible if the laws of chemistry were different.
All right, so that would include things like DNA, the molecules of DNA.
Right.
Chemistry includes things like the whole DNA molecule. So all the order, I think they say it contains the information of maybe 1,000 Encyclopedia Britannicas.
Exactly.
And that's a lot of information. That's a lot of order right there. All right, number 9. I'm sorry, you were going to say
that's
something?
Okay. I was just going to say, protein, the building DNA, the protein, building blocks of protein. Easy for me to say, right? Now, the chances of a protein molecule coming into existence randomly is 1 to 10 to the 150th power.
All
right. That's 10 with 150 zeros.
All right, so let's say that we have some people that, let's say we have an atheist and he goes into a casino.
Okay.
Can you put that in terms of like a casino?
Sure. I mean, look, if he sits down at a poker game,
okay,
the chances of someone pulling a royal flush is 1 in 650,000. Okay? So let's say he's at the poker game and he's got, let's say, 3 aces and 2 kings. He's got a great hand. He starts betting up a storm. Somebody pulls a royal flush. He's down to the tune of thousands of dollars, loses his money. He says to himself, well, it's almost impossible that can happen again. So he goes in again. He gets another great hand. He starts betting up a storm. Same guy gets another royal flush. Now, you might start scratching your head and say, that's bizarre. How is that possible? But you know what? I'm going to hang in there. He gets another great hand, starts betting. Now he mortgages the house on this hand because it's so good. Guy comes up with another royal flush again. Now, let me ask you something, Nick. What would you conclude after a guy gets 3 royal flushes in a row?
I would conclude that he is doing well in the casino, and that by the way, folks, for those of you that are listening, you're listening to Las Vegas Apologetics.
we shifted time zones here.
This in no way reflects New York Apologetics. I guess, Anthony, would be at that point, I would think that they'd probably have 2 big guys like sitting next to him at that point.
I'm thinking that the game is rigged. I'm thinking nobody pulls 3 royal flushes in a row. It's just impossible. And as an atheist, if you were sitting at the table and you lost all that money, would you continue to sit there?
No.
I'm guessing no. Yet, when we look at the constants, the physical constants in the universe, and the fact that these are much, much, much more less probable than a royal straight flush, and you see how all of these things must be put together, there's over 100 physical constants that have to come in a row. That would be like pulling a royal flush 100 times in a row. In fact, your chances of hitting lotto twice in a row is only 1 to the 10 to the 15th power. That's 10 with 15 zeros. Versus a protein molecule is 1 to 10 to the 150th power. 150 zeros. It's a mathematical impossibility.
Yeah, those are some crazy odds.
Yeah, I wouldn't sit at the poker table knowing guy just pulled 3 royal flushes. I mean, you know, you'd have to be pretty bold, and I don't want to say it, but to sit there and do that,
I mean,
not smart.
All right, folks, listening to Anthony here at New York Apologetics, I think we might have to say something like, New York Apologetics, shh, shh.
Look, we're street apologists, right? We're from New York. God. So, I mean, we put these things in terms that we can all understand and use illustrations that might be pertinent to people today. So, and listen, the views that I'm giving you now, right, may not necessarily reflect the views of management. So I'm not encouraging you to gamble. I'm just using this as an illustration.
Okay. Number 9 on the worksheet, it talks about the laws of planetary motion. And basically, the creation scientist, Johannes Kepler, discovered that the planets in our solar system obey 3 laws of nature. And you might not be interested in these 3 laws, but these planets do obey them. It's just information for you. Number 9A, planets orbit in ellipses, which is kind of like almost like an oval type of thing. B, planets sweep out equal areas at equal times. And C, they found the exact mathematical relationship between a planet's distance from the sun and its orbital period. And these things are so exact that they're actually considered laws of planetary motion. Again, if you had chaos, there's no way that this could be represented the way that it is.
Right. So if you follow along on your sheet, A is planets orbit in ellipses. B, planets sweep out equal areas in equal times. And C, the exact mathematical relationship between a planet's distance from the sun and its orbital period.
All right, folks, and that brings us to number 10, which is the laws of physics. Now, the field of physics describes the behavior of the universe at its most fundamental level. There are many different laws of physics, and they describe the way the universe operates today. Some of the laws describe how light propagates, how energy is transported, how gravity operates, how mass moves through space, and many other phenomena.
The laws of physics, along with their associated constants, are fine-tuned in just the right way so that life, particularly human life, is possible. This fact is called the anthropic principle. It's also known as the fine-tuning argument. Just a reminder that you're listening to New York Apologetics Radio. You can go to our website where you'll find studies on apologetics, arguments, and worldviews. Just click on the area that interests you and you're on your way. I also want to let you know that you can reach myself, Nick, or Anthony by email. Nick is nick@newyorkapologetics.com. I'm Anthony. You can reach me at anthony@newyorkapologetics.com. You can ask us a question directly by email or on the website, also by clicking on the tab, Ask a Question. We also have a blog up there where from time to time we put some thoughts that we have about the world, the reality of the world around us, and the Christian worldview. We'd encourage you to go read those blogs. And in fact, you could leave a comment, and again, we can interact with you. So back to you, Nick.
Okay, we can also you can also reach out to us on Twitter if you have something to say. You can hit us up on Twitter or Facebook. You know, we're always watching that, no matter where we are, and our team is always on top of that. Okay, so we looked at the laws of chemistry, the laws of planetary motion, number 10, the laws of physics, and we also have number 11, the laws of mathematics. And I'm going to give you an old definition for mathematics because there's such controversy over the definition of mathematics.
Really?
They can't even agree. Oh, it's amazing. But Aristotle defined mathematics as the science of quantity.
Okay.
And we'll just leave it at that because the scientists are arguing over it. They don't even have a definition anymore.
Really?
Yeah. But
wow.
These are definite laws, numbers, even though they're abstract. And of course, even though there's laws of mathematics, numbers themselves are abstract, meaning that they exist, like the number three, but it has no causal property. In other words, the number three can't do anything.
Right. So the number three, I would say, is something that we discovered, we didn't invent. Right?
We can't
invent numbers. We discover them, and then we describe them. Otherwise, we can invent new numbers all the time, and maybe I weigh a little bit less. Now that I look at my scale, I figure out a new number, and look at this. I lost. We can make up a number. But anyway.
All right, but that would violate the next law, which would be the laws of logic.
Yes, it would.
Number 12. So the laws of logic, which we've covered in prior broadcasts, but the laws of logic are transcendent truths.
Right. They don't exist physically. In other words, you can't discover the laws of logic with your five senses. You can't weigh them. You can't smell them. You can't see or hear them or taste them. These are laws that exist above nature, they don't have physical properties or physical quantities. That's why they're transcendent. So the laws of logic, like the law of non-contradiction, A can't be A and not A at the same time, these are things that are actually hardwired into us. They're inherent to our thinking.
You know, we had, speaking of logic, we were attacked on Twitter this week about a particular Bible verse in Isaiah. I think it was Isaiah maybe 44:22 or 40:20. I'm not even sure of the verse, but it says that it talks about the circle of the earth. Mm. And the atheist, and that was so far, you know, prior to us discovering that the earth was round. And in Proverbs 8, it also says that God drew the circle. You know, it actually talks about him drawing the circle of the earth, if you will. So the atheist said that, how dare we call the earth a sphere, and that the Bible people believe that the earth was flat, and that, you know, we have some nerve. So we said to him, look, you know, you're setting up a straw man, the laws of logic, right? And a straw man, for those of you that are new to logic, means that you set up something that you know you can take down, like a paper man or a straw man, and specifically something maybe the person didn't say, like, show me in the Bible where the word sphere is. So when we said to this atheist, we said, look, you know what, you set up a straw man, it does say circle. And then he went to the Hebrew, and he says the word in Hebrew is this and that, and it doesn't mean circle. And then we went to the Hebrew and he was mistaken. So we pointed out to him that, oh, by the way, you're mistaken on the Hebrew word. So number one, you're mistaken on your terminology. It said circle, you're saying sphere. Number two, the Hebrew word, which was, I think it was H-U-G, hug, if you will, that talks about a circle. And, you know, I said, you're misrepresenting the Hebrew text, number one. You're misrepresenting the laws of logic because you're setting up a straw man. So really, what exactly are you trying to prove? Mm. And he went away. He backed out. So I hopefully he's thinking about it. And, you know, once again, the Bible stands.
Right. You know, look, I think there are times when we engage in conversation, and sometimes in order to defend turf, we may either misrepresent the other person's position, or we might hold to something that we may know may not necessarily be 100% true. And both sides have to be willing to listen to each other and admit when we're wrong. Because, look, the argument becomes an argument and not a free exchange of ideas. So it's best for both sides to look at it, and if it doesn't jive, admit that that doesn't jive. It's very simple.
Okay, so that brings us to number 13, which is the uniformity of nature.
Right. The laws of nature are uniform, right? That means that they do not arbitrarily change. They're constant, and they apply throughout the whole cosmos. The laws of nature apply in the future just as they have applied in the past. And this is one of the most basic assumptions in all of science. Without this assumption, science itself would be impossible, right? If the laws of nature suddenly and arbitrarily change tomorrow, then past experimental results would tell us nothing about the future.
So, I mean, each one of us depend on the uniformity of nature. And every time we wake up in the morning, we expect the sun to be there. We expect oxygen to remain in our atmosphere. We expect water to not change its properties. I mean, there's just everything that we know in the physical material world we depend on as far as this uniformity is concerned.
Right. In fact, the uniformity of nature provides excellent proof of the existence of God, because as an atheist, when all you have is nature, what is your justification that the laws of nature will remain uniform? In other words, what justifies that tomorrow will be just like today? Okay, as a theist, the uniformity of nature is grounded in the unchanging nature of God and the unchanging nature of his decree. As an atheist, what are you basing your assumption that tomorrow is going to be like today on?
You know, they really have nowhere to base it, nowhere to anchor it, because all of these laws that we mentioned are really inconsistent with naturalism. Now, there has to be a transcendent cause. Now, if you're wondering what transcendent means, the definition would be that it's beyond or above the range of normal or merely physical human experience.
Right. In other words, it's not physical, okay? It's something that's transcendent is not something that you're going to be able to weigh on a scale. Again, like Nick said, it's beyond or above the range of normal, mere physical human existence. So all these laws that we talked about today are transcendent. They're above us. We can observe the results of these and the effects of these laws, but we can't actually show you the law itself.
Yeah, now we're gonna have to bring this broadcast to a close, and hopefully you're enjoying this. And I just want to say that, you know, we do look forward to your comments. We do look forward to the interaction that we've been getting. We want to say thank you to those of you that are reaching out to us. Again, at www.newyorkapologetics. So, Anthony, why don't you close us out?
So from Nick and Anthony at New York Apologetics, be equipped, be empowered, and be engaged with the culture around you. We want to offer you black and white answers in a gray world. And until next week, think it through.
Don't miss the New York Apologetics radio show every Thursday evening at 7 p.m. right here on Hope Radio. For more information, head over to newyorkapologetics.com.